as the Board of Healthcare Funders, BHF, has launched a new legal challenge against the National Health Insurance Act. The organization argues that Parliament failed to ensure proper public participation and that the Act in its current form threatens sustainable healthcare delivery in South Africa. To discuss this further, we now speak to Managing Director of the Board of Healthcare Funders, that being Dr. Katlego Muthudi. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir. Thanks for having us.
Doctor, it's wonderful having you on the airwaves of Voice of the Cape, sir. Before we have a discussion in regards to the tenets of your case, could you give us an outline in terms of what your organization is arguing on this matter?
The legal strategy had always sought to examine the processes that all those who are involved in the crafting of the law engaged in. This particular challenge looks at the role of Parliament and how it was supposed to capacitate a law that is workable, implementable. But we saw that there were a few challenges. The first thing is that because there isn't clarity on what services are actually contained in this law or will be made available through this law, and secondly, how they would be costed. Now, with that paucity of information, it would be difficult for anybody to really engage meaningfully with the law. Secondly, the handling of the many submissions. We understand that there were thousands of submissions. We also, throughout the history of this law, made numerous submissions. A lot of the questions that were asked and many of the suggestions that were put forth were actually disregarded because the bill that was put forth in the National Assembly and the one that came out and sent to the President out of the National Council of Provinces was unchanged, meaning that nothing over and above what the Department of Health had suggested was actually considered.
Yeah. I know BHF has been challenging the NHI Act since its introduction. And by challenging, I know your organization has been, in actual fact, asking for more clarity and transparency in terms of how the Act would actually function. Before we have a conversation in regards to how it actually functions, have you gotten any response from government in your numerous attempts to inquire upon them?
So, with regards to our submissions, I say there was very little feedback, if anything. It was quite disappointing to get feedback from the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee when we made our presentation that they had not even gone through our submission. This is actually contained in our legal papers. But since we've launched the court process, this is part two. The first part where we challenged the assent to the Act by the Presidency, the High Court actually agreed with us in terms of what we requested for. We wanted to see a record of the decision-making process that the President has. Unfortunately, they have now appealed that decision. So that is what has happened to date. We expect that it will be a protracted process. And subsequent to that, we were also joined in the litigation process by at least six other organizations who have put forth their own challenges.
And your organization has also argued that in its current form, it could threaten sustainable healthcare delivery. Could you expand on that in terms of how it could impact that?
There are a number of issues to consider. Section 33 and other sections in the Act proposes that once the fund is fully established, medical aids will no longer be allowed to offer similar services. That, we think, will overburden the already stretched public health system. We know that the issues of capacity have not been attended to, whether from a facility and infrastructure perspective, or even from a human resource perspective. That is one area. The second area is sustainability. We don't even know where to start in terms of assessing it because there has been no cost estimate. But through the litigation, there are some estimates that other entities have put forth using the medical aid or private health sector as a base. They have estimated that we might actually need more than twice the current budget, and we know that we do not have the capacity for that. I mean, you've seen the kind of reaction that the country had when that was being raised to collect a few more billion rand. Now, how are we going to collect maybe 300-400 billion rand more into the fiscus?
Mm-hmm. I think, as you were speaking, the one thing that came through to me was the reality that it seems as if all parties in some way, shape or form want some form of universal basic coverage or some form of universal healthcare for South Africans. The only issue here that I can understand is the matter of capacity and whether or not we can actually undertake such an endeavor. And as you were speaking, you were talking about capacity and whether we can service such an endeavor. I was thinking to myself that the health sector right now is already struggling with the cutting of US aid. And I'm wondering if a sector that is struggling with something of that nature can handle the undertaking that the private sector has already been dealing with.
And I think that there's an argument that has been put forth that while we are struggling, we do have certain resources. And we would want the state to recognize the private sector as a resource, not as an inhibitor. The medical aid sector contributes about 240 billion rand into the healthcare system. And this is voluntary contributions from people who've already paid their taxes. Now, if you abolish it or dismantle it, you are basically going to lose that. That money is not translatable into additional taxes. And by so doing, about almost 10 million people would then be forced to seek help from the public sector. And we think that while we don't have adequate resources, use all available resources and make sure that you capacitate each sector. We are not saying that the private sector does not have issues. There are cost issues, price escalations that are sometimes prohibitive. But we have other health reform mechanisms that are suggested. In 2019, there was a report from the Health Market Inquiry that suggested how the private sector could be, in addition, regulated to manage the pricing and also make sure that more people can access healthcare in there. The BHF, one of its projects, has been at pains to introduce what you call the low-cost benefit option, which would take, we estimate, 10 million people out of the public sector to access private healthcare. And those little steps, when you look at them additively, could actually build up to progressive steps to alleviate these challenges.
I'm wondering then, what is the way forward in this respect, in terms of not only your organization? Because, again, the only thing I'm thinking of is the reality that this is now a law. And we are sitting here having a conversation in regards to the possible funding and what could possibly happen, when in reality we're supposed to have these answers from government at the end of the day.
And there's a challenge, isn't it? That we have a law, but we don't have clarity on how it's going to work. We are hopeful that the courts will actually see the sense in what we are asking or in our prayers and send the law back to Parliament for it to be reworked. And actually make sure that we expand coverage rather than restrict it through dismantling certain aspects of the private healthcare or disabling, for example, part of the compensation fund, which is funded largely by the consumers and employers and employees. And all those additional items could actually add up to having a more sustainable system.
Yeah. Doctor, unfortunately, that's all the time we have. I want to thank you for coming onto our airwaves and having this conversation with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.